He is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know, it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. It's our Super Bowl week edition. And allow me to say this unequivocally and with as much conviction as I have in my soul. The National Football League cannot afford another officiating blunder in a championship game if it wants to be taken seriously, especially as legalized gambling arrives in America and these games need to meet the highest standards of integrity. And yet, after watching Roger Goodell hem and haw and hedge and use the oldest excuse in the commissioner's handbook, humans make mistakes. Yeah, no crap. I have no confidence at all that the league will right the wrong of the New Orleans debacle. Arrogance, foolishness, stupidity, all of the above apply.
All you need to know about sports today in 15 minutes, or maybe 18, you know, depending on the Warriors, the Steelers, Trump, and the LeBron James Media Network.
This Super Bowl was shaped, of course, by one of the worst officiating calls in sports history. And with that debacle came another reminder that the NFL, even in a bounce-back season with robust TV ratings, fewer crime stories, and a minimum of racial politics, still can't get out of its own way. It took Goodell more than a week to officially acknowledge a mistake in missing that blatant pass interference call against the Rams, which was poor form on Goodell's part in a continuation of what has been so flawed about his commissionership. He is slow to respond to any crisis in the house. And he only did so this time in response to a lawsuit filed by two Saints season ticket holders. That's a long shot, but I'm glad they filed it. While Goodell is right that errors will happen in a game, there's no reason at all that replay reviews shouldn't be expanded to correct pass interference calls in the final 5 minutes of a game. And if they had been applied in the NFC title game, the Saints would be playing the Patriots, not the Rams. Goodell was pummeled, and rightfully so, at his State of the League news conference as a big fat asterisk hangs over the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. But disturbingly, Goodell remained loyal to the reality that officials are human beings and will make mistakes, and that he doesn't want robots calling the games, and that he never once considered evoking his powers to overturn that call or even replay that portion of the NFC title game. In other words, do not hold your breath that significant reform will happen, which is the latest example of how this man consistently bows to the arrogance of these billionaire owners and should not be anywhere near the commissioner's chair. Here was Goodell in Atlanta.
Whenever an officiating is part of any kind of discussion post-game, it's never a good outcome for us. We know that, our clubs know that, our officials know that. But we also know our officials are human. We also know that they're officiating a game that moves very quickly and have to make snap decisions under difficult circumstances. And they're not going to get it right every time. As I say, they're human. We have worked very hard to bring technology in to try to make sure we could do whatever's possible to address those issues. But technology is not going to solve all those issues. The game is not officiated by robots. It's not going to be. But we have to continue to go down that path. Go back specifically on Sunday night, I think Coach Payton spoke to Al Riveron, our head of officials, immediately after the game. Al told him that that's a play we want to have called. I have spoken to him. Troy Vincent, the head of football operations, have spoken to him. I've spoken to Mrs. Benson. Coach has also spoken to the competition committee, Rich McKay, the chairman. So there's been a great deal of communication and making sure that they understand that. As far where we can go, we will look again at instant replay. There have been a variety of proposals over the last, frankly, 15, 20 years of should replay be expanded. It does not cover judgment calls. This was a judgment call. The other complication is that it was a no call. And our coaches and clubs have been very resistant, and there has not been support to date about having a replay official or somebody in New York throw a flag when there's no flag. They have not voted for that in the past. It doesn't mean that we won't. It's something that we're going to put to the competition committee, see if there's an answer to that. But the reality is that's been at least an opposition philosophically for many clubs.
Yep, that's right. Pass the buck. Blame it on the teams. Don't take any initiative yourself. That's Roger Goodell. The league's competition committee, including Saints coach Sean Payton, will try to hash this out in the offseason. I would love to be in that room. And Payton decided to come out of his self-described cave and address the media in New Orleans just before Goodell began his news conference in Atlanta. And if you looked closely, Payton was wearing a quarter zip-up t-shirt with a t-shirt under it. And sure enough, it included a print of Goodell looking like a clown, which we've seen before up in New England. That finally gave Saints fans a chance to laugh, but Sean Payton is not laughing.
What is it now, a week and a half? Feels like it's been longer than that. I would say, honestly, after the game for 2 to 3 days, much like normal people, I sat, probably didn't come out of my room. I ate Jenny's ice cream and watched Netflix for three straight days. There's certain vices you gravitate to. For me, it's probably sugar. Anyway, much of what we told the team, you know, that obviously there are disappointments that you go through relative to your season, and in this one, you know, where it happened, you know, in the postseason, and we've got to, you know, be able to get past that, and we will. We've got good leadership on this team, and I don't know that you ever completely get over it, but I think you do get past it, and there's enough resolve, I think, that this time away is healthy, and when it starts back up again in the spring, and we'll look at that calendar, you get back at it again.
The committee is expected to at least consider allowing coaches challenges for incorrect judgment calls, a plan that should be in place already, while penalizing coaches who are wrong with the penalty or by running time off the clock. But again, I wouldn't hold your breath. If there is opposition in that room in the form of John Elway and Stephen Jones, and then you've got Payton over here, my God, a food fight? You're going to have to call security? And obviously, Goodell cannot allow this problem to go unaddressed in that room. Why won't he be in the room? He can't risk another tainted postseason in the future. The NFL, remember, got an undeserved reprieve in the public eye this season. Is the league about to blow that chance, too? Roger, stop deferring to committees, do your damn job, exert your powers, and earn your $200 million contract extension. All I can say is, with an audience of 110 million watching on Sunday and an odor in the air that this is a stolen Super Bowl, the NFL cannot afford, as I've said, another game-altering officiating screw-up. Can you believe Rams cornerback Nickell Robey-Coleman, the former undrafted free agent who committed the penalty that wasn't called, has received numerous death threats and hate mail on his social media accounts? That's on you, NFL. But hey, the league sure knows how to shut down a news conference involving Maroon 5, Travis Scott, and Big Boy. Fearing questions about why those artists are performing at the halftime show when so many Other acts rejected that gig in continuing to honor the Colin Kaepernick-led protest movement. The NFL simply canceled the traditional news conference featuring those acts. This would be censorship, and rather than the NFL explaining in a news release, quote, Maroon 5 has been working hard on a Pepsi Super Bowl halftime show that will meet and exceed the standards of this event, as it is all about music, the artists will let their show do the talking, unquote. Come on, Roger, I'd rather hear that from the artists themselves. Yet, here's some more hypocrisy for you. The NFL did nothing to censor Patriots star Rob Gronkowski after he made a sexually suggestive remark to a female reporter during a Super Bowl media session. Let's see, the Rolling Stones, Prince, Paul McCartney, U2, Lady Gaga, Madonna, The Who, they all showed up at the news conference, but not Maroon 5. Roger Goodell is concerned at what Maroon 5 might say. Roger, have you ever listened to their lyrics? Sugar! Not exactly moves like Jagger here, Roger. And for the first time in this rambling, gambling nation of ours, bettors are allowed to wager legally on a Super Bowl outside of Nevada. Even as a sports purist, I cannot avoid the frenzy. I'd like to, I can't. Meaning there's a greater need than ever for hints of an edge in the big game. Not that I'm a tout, but here's the lopsided difference between the Patriots and Rams. Experience. It's almost comical realizing that Tom Brady will be playing in his ninth Super Bowl when the entire roster of the LA Rams has a combined 5 Super Bowl appearances. 9 for Brady, 5 for the entire Rams team. 38 Patriots players have been in this game compared to 4 Rams players. And so that experience factor just might explain, amid the relentless babble of a generation gap heavy week in Atlanta, why Bill Belichick was texting Sean McVay after every Rams game this season. At first, I didn't get it. Belichick is 66, McVay is 33, and Belichick is tech-phobic. The man who once said this.
Well, as you know, I'm not on Snapface and all that, so I don't really get those.
But now I see what Belichick was up to. Sensing the rise of the Rams all season, he wanted to keep a potential Super Bowl enemy coach close to him. Keep your enemies close, right? And maybe Belichick succeeded, listening to the gee whiz tone in McVay's voice about those interactions with Hoodie.
I was more, you know, kind of like a googly-eyed schoolgirl saying how appreciative I was that he would even take the time to even think about me. And, you know, it's really very, you know, our interaction has been very limited, but the way that he's treated me has been really cool. But his text game is nice.
I'm telling you, Belichick must have been a Russian spy in a previous life. Or, I don't know, maybe his current life. I know it's a lost and troubling cause for the NBA, trying to stop the pre-free agency maneuvering of superstar players who want to force their way to preferred destinations a season or two early. But at least Adam Silver is pushing back, fining Anthony Davis $50,000 after his agent, Rich Paul, demanded that the New Orleans Pelicans trade Davis to a, quote, team that allows him a chance to win consistently and win a championship, unquote. How would you like to be in New Orleans right now, by the way? Davis wants out, this stinkeroo call. But as the man said, Mardi Gras is coming up. Mardi Gras coming up. It has been obvious for months that LeBron James and his business partner slash agent, Paul, are trying to maneuver their client, Davis, to the LA Lakers. Again, this juxtaposition. LA is benefiting from New Orleans' misfortune. Super Bowl, now LeBron and the Lakers. What's going on here? L.A. to New Orleans. I just wanted to point that out. Obviously, it damages the NBA when Davis can get his way eventually by telling all the other teams that he will not sign long-term with them, even if he is traded to one of those destinations, which in the end damages the New Orleans franchise, and that it limits the return the Pelicans can get for Davis. So the Pelicans just getting screwed here as much as the Saints got screwed. The agent and the superstar have all the power here, and as we've seen in the premature mercenary circumventions of Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler, Paul George, and others, it creates this haves and have-nots structure that is bad for business in a league built on revenue sharing. Remember, the pie is supposed to be split equally in the NBA. Obviously, it is not. But notice how Silver, the commissioner, stopped short of punishing LeBron Inc. for tampering, which is essentially what James did when he recently said he would love to have Davis with him in L.A., then took Anthony out to dinner on the town. There's no chance Silver takes any more action here than this $50,000 fine, which is a kick in the bucket, because he lets LeBron and his camp get away with anything they say or do. And face it, the NBA needs the Lakers and LeBron James to be championship relevant, which isn't happening unless a second superstar joins LeBron. And there's no greater force in that vein out there right now than Anthony Davis. I remind you that Silver's successor, David Stern, did have the stones to nullify a deal that would have sent Chris Paul from New Orleans, and here we go again, to the Lakers. New Orleans, LA again, thinking it was lopsided. And while Silver doesn't run the current New Orleans franchise as Stern was doing in the interim back then, Tom Benson's widow, Gail, inherited that lead role in ownership. This commissioner could enter the picture and help make sure she isn't being fleeced. Would Adam Silver actually wave off another major deal involving the Lakers? I say no way. So while a team could trade for Davis before the February 7 trade deadline and try to squeeze title contention out of him for a season and a half, say that that's what the Raptors are trying to do with Leonard, for instance, Davis still can sign with the Lakers as an unrestricted free agent in July 2020. Problem is LeBron will be entering year three by then, and who knows, he'll need a straitjacket by then. And we're hearing more hints dropped by other agents. Klay Thompson, for instance, suddenly might be interested in signing with the Lakers if Davis joins LeBron, which means the Warriors might put together a package involving, I don't know, Thompson and or Draymond Green to New Orleans in the offseason. Now, which teams might make offers over the next week? Lakers, Knicks, Bucks, Raptors. Imagine Davis with the Greek Freak or Davis with Kawhi Leonard the rest of the season. I don't see that happening. The Pelicans are best served waiting a few months when they can see which team has the number one pick in the draft. Maybe it's New York. Maybe they trade Davis for the rights to pick Zion Williamson, who is basketball's next great beast. And while Davis supposedly doesn't list Boston as a preferred destination, the Celtics could extract a season out of him if the Pelicans wait to deal with Boston in the offseason. Pelicans coach Alvin Gentry, who has seen it all in his long NBA career, is trying to deal with yet another low blow. He went from having Davis and Boogie Cousins to having neither.
I didn't want to imagine it happening. You know, no, but you know, I mean, the NBA, you know, the things, you know, stuff happens, you know, so you deal with it. And that's what we're doing. We're dealing with, you know, what we have and what's going on here. And that doesn't mean that we're not going to continue to compete and try to turn our season around and see what can happen with it.
Do you think it's good for the league, Coach, when a handful of guys congregate on a handful of teams? Do you think this is a problem that small market ownership has with the rest of the league when stuff like this happens?
You know, that's really something. I I'm going to stay away from that. But, you know, I mean, I think that the guys that have done it, you know, it's their right to do, you know, and I don't know if it's possible or it would make sense to take that right away. So, you know, it is what it is.
Credit Gentry and the shorthanded Pels for shaking off the Davis blockbuster and stunning the Houston Rockets on the road, while limiting James Harden to 11 of 32 shooting, though Harden still was extending his remarkable streak of 30-plus point games to 24, a run surpassed in history only by Wilt Chamberlain, who is several inches taller than James. So the Davis story is about to get very blurry and very sad for small markets that grow and cultivate these players, then watch these players demand trades and make fans feel very inferior in those markets. Fake news will be the constant here, and the same goes for bullshit dropped by players such as Lonzo Ball, whose camp, oh, hello, LeVar! Did the Lakers pay you to shut up lately? That camp says, that would be LeVar, says Lonzo doesn't want to go to New Orleans in a Davis deal. He would prefer a three-way trade to New York or Chicago. You know what, Lonzo? Feel luckier even in the league at this point and try to get off those crutches and those boots. I mean, Lonzo Ball is making demands. And in the big picture, how sad that the All-Star game coming up will be dominated by nothing but Anthony Davis talk, while 23 other world-class basketball players are pretty much ignored. In these divided, hostile times, the Patriots are the fitting, polarizing dynasty. There is much respect for Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, and maybe even grudging reverence after 9 Super Bowls in 17 years, but neither is a beloved figure in this country. The franchise's embrace of President Trump is one reason, and if Brady was on his way to being embraced by the masses, Deflategate kind of put the brakes on that. Yet there's no disputing that Brady, with a 6th Super Bowl title, would further cement his status as the greatest quarterback ever. And Belichick, I think you can start asking, given the sustained longevity of the New England machine, where he ranks in the pantheon of coaches in all sports. Vince Lombardi, Phil Jackson, Greg Popovich, Mike Krzyzewski, Nick Saban, John Wooden. Where would he rank? Because the NFL has built-in limitations intended to prevent dynasties, I'm tempted to say Belichick is the best of the best. But you know what? I can't get past Deflategate. I can't get past Spygate. I can't get past the cloud of cheating, though I've seen no signs of cheating the last few seasons. I have to be fair here. And I can't get by his coaching tree with a combined 1 NFL playoff victory and many failures among the likes of Charlie Weiss, Eric Mancini, Romeo Crennel, etc. As for Brady, he has fanned the flames of New England hatred with his "We're still here" retort. But there is pressure on this operation Sunday. If the Patriots win, their Super Bowl record is 6-3. If not, it's a lukewarm 5-4, and they will have lost twice in a row to NFC underdogs. Brady, who would become the most decorated of Super Bowl winners with a 6th title, was asked by a Cub reporter how he deals with the haters. That's a great question, kid.
How are you able to focus despite the negative fan base? AKA the haters. I don't know. What do we do about the haters? We love them. We love them. We love them back because we don't hate back. We appreciate it and we love them and we wish them the best in their life.
And Rob Gronkowski, who says he will maul his future in the offseason, says the Patriots are having fun with the latest conspiracy theory that Brady has a bionic arm replacement.
Yeah, she is fun. Fun part about it. You know, you get to laugh at, you know, the other player that gets made fun of. And then you get to say the comments to him, too. Like, Tom has a new arm. We've heard that one before. And then I'll practice for telling Tom he has a new arm. But we're just doing it all for laughs and fun because we know he doesn't have a new arm. And we know he's legit and his arm is strong as ever.
But one thing that has evolved for the better, the relationship between Belichick and Brady, who, remember, last year were at war over the presence of Brady's suspicious trainer, Alex Guerrero, but now are at peace, according to Brady.
I know he has a lot of confidence in me, obviously. And I don't think we've changed much. We have a great understanding of one another, and, you know, I certainly couldn't be the head coach of the team, and, you know, he couldn't play quarterback, and we do our jobs the best we know how. I know he has a lot of confidence in me. Obviously, I have all the confidence in the world in him. You know, he's taught me so much about leadership, and he's been so consistent, and his goal is winning, and that's what mine is. You know, we've been a part of each other's lives for a long time, and seeing the best things that have happened in our life and some of the toughest things that have happened in our lives. Your relationship grows and develops over a long period of time through those moments, and he'll always be an important part of my life.
Again, as I've been saying for days, if the Patriots win, this would be the perfect exclamation point on which to leave both of them, retire. And if Brady is saying otherwise, let's see how he feels when he's 43 and missing the playoffs. You had to laugh at how Roby Coleman, who has no business saying anything as the sheepish beneficiary of that New Orleans non-call, was backpedaling after a publication quoted him as dissing Brady, claiming that he said Brady was aging and beatable and no longer a good quarterback.
Well, I think everybody just made a big deal out of the situation. You know, Tom Brady is a great quarterback. I wasn't trying to say nothing bad about him. I respect him as the GOAT. He is the legend, and I think words just got misconstrued and got taken out of context.
Too late there, Nikhil. The Patriots already are dancing on your grave, and all of New Orleans will be joining them. It doesn't require hyper-advanced analytics to forecast Sunday's game. If Todd Gurley is back to his gashing all-pro self, then the Rams, I think, have a shot because Belichick will have trouble focusing on taking away one offensive element. But if Gurley continues to struggle with that nagging knee problem, forget it. Belichick simply takes away Jared Goff in the passing game with constant pressure, forcing Goff into mistakes. Gurley says he's raring to go in an interview with Deion Sanders. By the way, ESPN 30 for 30, Deion Thursday night. Why am I giving them a little hit here? They don't deserve that.
Man, feeling good. Super Bowl 53.
You see how you just click that switch and you start smiling and you went into that remote? Is that the switch that you're going to click when you get on that field on Sunday?
That's always the switch. I always switch that on. It's just, oh, man, you know how it is. You know how it is on game day, prime. It's a good feeling, man. You know, you just get on that field and you just feel like you can't be stopped, and that's how you're supposed to feel.
The experience angle truly is a major factor, though, with the exception of the Rams defensive coordinator, 71-year-old Wade Phillips. You almost wonder if Belichick, in what appeared to be a tribute to Wade, saying that he was still running the same defensive schemes he has for decades, actually was frothing at the mouth. Listen to Hoodie here. Do you think basically he's trying to get into Wade's head?
He's been successful everywhere he's been. He's been doing it for 30 years in multiple organizations with multiple groups of players against every kind of offense he could see. So, yeah, I remember dealing it with him when I was in Cleveland. It's basically, you know, and to his credit, there's not many of us that have a system that can last that long. And, you know, I've certainly changed a lot in the last 30 years schematically. Wade really hasn't. I mean, he really hasn't.
Truth is, Phillips has changed, focusing on stopping the run in the postseason and succeeding against two huge rushing teams in Dallas and New Orleans. So I think the key player in this game is the monstrous Aaron Donald, who has to create pressure up the middle and try to make Brady move side to side in the pocket. Otherwise, Brady would have no problem whatsoever picking apart the Rams as long as his offensive line, which has allowed no sacks and little pressure in the postseason, continues to be flawless. And knowing that the Rams have undersized linebackers, who's going to cover Gronk? But don't underestimate Wade. He's a hip guy. Hip at 71, as discovered by one of his players, cornerback Aqib Talib, who marvels at how Phillips is very active on Twitter, 71, and how he rocked that 10-gallon hat and sheepskin coat as a tribute to his father, Bum Phillips, when the Rams arrived in Atlanta. Here was Talib interviewing Wade. Yep, it's Super Bowl week.
Live from Atlanta. I'm here with Coach Wade, you know, the mastermind, the defense. So I just want to know, like, Coach, when you really, really figured, like, you really got this defensive coordinator stuff under control, like, you really could be pretty good at this?
Well, I've been popping since my demo, baby.
He's been popping since his demo, man. Shout out Future. That's the question that's burning. He's been popping since his demo.
That's the answer.
You know what I'm saying?
And despite the wintry weather that socked Atlanta in midweek, the NFL is expecting a dry field and temperatures in the high 50s at kickoff on Sunday with a small chance of occasional rain. That means the roof above that supersonic stadium in Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, actually might be open. Opens up like a flower and its petals. Yeah, if you have that roof, open it if it's nice weather. And if it dips down into, 51 degree territory, so what? You could be in Chicago right now, South Dakota. And of course, that open roof would favor the LA team, right? No, I think it would favor the GOAT quarterback. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. And Chris, do you not find it odd that the NFL can shut down a Maroon 5 news conference but can't figure out why pass interference calls should be reviewable in the final 5 minutes of a game? And what did you think of Roger Goodell's press conference?
Jay, I don't really find it that odd because they don't want Maroon 5 to say something that would be bad for the league, meaning bad PR, especially Super Bowl. The last few days leading into Super Bowl Sunday, that's the last thing they want, is that Colin Kaepernick stuff coming out, any sort of question about player safety, not kill it. And especially considering Maroon 5 probably aren't trained in those answers and haven't been briefed like they need to be, why even risk it? So I get that. And ultimately, as much as they'll talk about trying to review this in the rules committee and this and the competition committee, they don't really care, do they? If they cared, they would have somehow figured out a way. I guess if they ultimately really did care, the commissioner could have reversed that call and made them play the final, minute and change. Now, we know that wasn't going to happen, but if he really did care, if they really wanted to get it right, if they really cared about the integrity of the game and referees, at the end of the day, they're much more concerned about Colin Kaepernick or anything about anthem protest or anything about player safety being brought up heading into the biggest game, in the world, maybe? Definitely in the country, than a pass interference call that wasn't called or a helmet-to-helmet that wasn't called that sent the Rams rather than the Saints. I think that's the truth there, Jay.
And beyond fining Anthony Davis $50,000, Chris, the NBA is helpless in slowing the procession of superstars forcing their way to other teams before a free agency. You remember when David Stern waved off that Chris Paul deal to the Lakers. Could you imagine Adam Silver seeing all the tampering violations by LeBron and Rich Paul and perhaps the Lakers nullifying a deal if the Pelicans chose to accept a package from LA by the deadline next week? I don't think Silver has the balls because Silver needs LeBron and the Lakers competing for titles.
Yeah, that's never going to happen. I don't think Adam Silver's ever going to step in the way of LeBron James. LeBron James, Rich Paul, Maverick Carter, they run the league, Jay. And the funny thing is then there's this team in Northern California that just continues to play and continues to make headlines once in a while, usually for how they don't look great or they're not playing as well. While everyone talks about LeBron and Rich Paul and tampering and the Lakers, and we all know the Warriors are still going to win the NBA Finals. Who's going to stop them? It's just, it's mind-boggling how much attention is given to LeBron. And notice how I've kind of come full circle. I hated LeBron. I used to call him the B-word. Then I kind of got enamored with him coming to LA, and I fell for the hype, and the Lakers are going to be okay. They're going to make the playoffs. All is going to be good. And yet LeBron has done it again in much shorter order, I feel, of getting the full circle of back to his old tricks. There you go, LeBron. The Lakers aren't going to make the playoffs. They're going to fire Luke Walton. They'll get Anthony Davis. And you still won't be able to get past the Warriors.
And Chris, as Super Bowl week progresses, what are your takeaways so far? I see Sean McVay as the fresh face of the show. It's been fun. He is America's rooting interest, yet much as I see McVay gambling and taking some crazy chances Sunday, and hell, he's 33. What does he have to lose? He could be back here many more times. Sorry, I don't see the Rams winning because of the Patriots' lopsided experience factor. What about you?
Jay, obviously, I know everybody from the Rams. I cover this team. It's an intimate part of my business and my daily life. But I just wonder what everybody across the country thinks when they see Jared Goff, Todd Gurley, Aaron Donald, C.J. Anderson, Sean McVay. The team has been an incredible story this season, but I wonder how many people really know them, and I wonder how that plays compared to the evil empire of Brady and Belichick, where we know most people, 90% of the country doesn't want to see them win. But it's almost Brady coming off of last year, losing to the Eagles, being upset. Do you really think he does that? That happens 2 years in a row? I don't see that happening. I don't see it, especially Brady so fired up like this. So as much as I'd like to see the Rams, I think it'd be a great story for the NFL. I don't see how they get past the Patriots unless you just see mistakes happen. Aaron Donald hits Tom Brady. There's a fumble similar to last year's Super Bowl. And that Rams offense is able to put up enough points to get ahead of them or at least be able to be in contention late in the game when a mistake happens. But I just don't see that happening. I see the Patriots winning this game. But other than that, I feel like Super Week has been a little lackluster. And that's just how it is now. It's so overhyped. It's so overdone, really, from the years when we all first started covering this thing. It's really going to take something huge to shake it up or get us to pay attention more than just the usual media night hype and the usual press conference sound. I mean, how many times can we hear Sean McVay ask the same thing? How many times can we hear Belichick ask the same thing? It's the same thing every day, Jay. But when it's all said and done, there's nothing like Super Week, right?
Thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. Rashawn Gary is expected to be a first-round pick in the NFL draft, but rather than hire an established agent and handing over 10% in commission, Gary is hired himself. Gary will represent himself in the process and hopes to land players across all sports in his new boutique agency. I love this story. I wish him well. I just need to warn him, agents out there, it's a scumbag profession. And I hope they have enough class to not try to undercut him. I've had agents. And this is worth about three sentences. Two losers for life from something called Barstool Sports, which broadcasts its shows from the bottom of a sewage tank, I've been told, were kicked out of Super Bowl Media Night by the NFL. One of them, the founder, whose name it doesn't deserve being on this podcast, first got attention for his site many years ago by running a naked photo of Brady's then toddler son and was subsequently visited by the Massachusetts State Police in a child pornography investigation. What the hell happened to my profession? These scumbags are all over the profession. How do the parents feel about them being in the... aspiring journalists out there, don't get into this business. It's been ruined by these creeps and charlatans. I love what I just... What a great soundbite that was. And my early Super Bowl hero is Atlanta Falcons owner Arthur Blank, who has not changed the remarkably low concession stand prices at Mercedes-Benz Stadium for the big game. That means even though a ticket will cost in the thousands, the hot dog is still $2, soft drinks $2, nachos $3, beers $5. My God, I love Arthur Blank. If that isn't wild, consider Chick-fil-A, the popular chicken sandwich chain, also isn't letting the Super Bowl interfere with its usual business practices. Since its founding in 1946, Chick-fil-A outlets have been closed on Sundays, with the company setting aside, quote, one day to rest and worship if employees so choose, unquote. That means the Chick-fil-A location at the stadium near Section 123 will be closed on Super Bowl Sunday. And my other early Super Bowl hero is Rams receiver Brandon Cooks, who paid for the team's custodian, Alfonso Garcia, to make the trip to Atlanta with his son. Cooks didn't publicize this. Teammate Robert Woods let it out of the bag. And there's still time for multimillionaires from both teams to do the same.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too white male for Jemele Hill. Take it away, Jay.
2 years have passed since ESPN fired a tennis analyst, Doug Adler, for no good reason, for praising the, quote, gorilla, unquote, tactics of Venus Williams as she repeatedly rushed the net during a match. By gorilla, Adler was using a widely accepted tennis term and sports term that once shaped an entire Nike TV commercial featuring Andre Agassi and Pete Sampras playing gorilla tennis. That's gorilla, G-U-E-R-I-L-L-A. That's gorilla as in gorilla warfare on a court, not gorilla, G-O-R-I-L-L-A, as in ape or perhaps racism. But one of those bozo ESPN executives in Bristol, trying to stand for truth, justice, and a bigger holiday bonus, pushed to have Doug Adler fired without doing any investigative work. Since then, Adler has been wrongly disgraced in the industry. He has failed to gain any employment as an analyst. Is it any wonder he also suffered a heart attack and now has health bills? Adler's wrongful termination suit against ESPN continues. And if new network president Jimmy Pitaro has a heart, he will acknowledge the mistake on the watch of his predecessor, John Skipper, and give Adler a sizable settlement, or maybe his job back. I, for one, will not let this story go away. Sports media people are scared to criticize ESPN because they'd like to work there someday. As somebody who has worked there for 8 years, 1,700 shows, driving a daily TV debate program from scratch and turning it into a huge profit machine, I am proud to be a watchdog for people like Adler. While all of this was happening, Skipper, of course, was hooked on cocaine and wound up losing his job after claiming to have been extorted by a drug dealer. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.